see Zendaya like you've never seen her before.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court.
For more than a decade, she has had former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell.
It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules.
See Challengers now playing only in theaters. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
After that, like, you know, they did tally our drinks. You know, we had that drink limit of like we could only have like two drinks per hour, and they didn't even keep hard liquor.
Only.
It can't
we,
be.
Well,
a
we couldn't even take shots. I was like, you know, bored in the house. I was like, what are we gonna do?
But could you get like a whiskey neat as one of your drinks?
No, it had to be mixed.
Okay.
Yeah. So and
splash
like
of water.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here in Austin at South by Southwest at the TuneIn Podcast Stage. It has been quite a week for The Bachelor, so we have a great, great treat for you today. Here live on the TuneIn Podcast Stage, Here to Make Friends.
Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emma.
And I'm Claire, and we're joined today by Brittany Taylor, who was on Ari's season of The Bachelor. You might remember it just happened. And Brittany also lives in Austin, so hometown hero here.
We Thanks are for so, joining us. So excited that she's here.
I'm so excited to be here. And this is probably like one of the coolest things I've ever done.
Same.
Cooler than The Bachelor, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So speaking of The Bachelor, let's start at the conclusion. We just watched this two-night finale. What was up with that? Like, we saw Ari pick Becca. He changed his mind. He dumped Becca for like 45 minutes straight.
Then he begged Lauren back.
Ugh. He's got engaged to her live.
So there's a lot to take in. Do you have any feelings? You do know all of the players involved, Brittany.
Yeah. So I have a lot of feelings, a lot of thoughts, and especially knowing all of the players involved. But I will say, I guess it wasn't shown on the show, but I was really close with Becca K in the house. We were in the same limo. She was the first person I met coming out of the hotel room and then getting into the limo that night on the first night. So she was like literally like my first friend in the house. And then we were in the same room together. We bunked together and we just had this amazing bond together, like in the house. And so just watching your friend hurt, especially on national TV, and seeing the guy like breaking her heart, because in the house, like on the first week, whenever she got the first one-on-one date, I saw their chemistry and I was like, oh, I remember telling her specifically, like in our room, like in our little bunk room, I was like, you're going all the way. Like, I know you're going to take it home. I was like, even though I don't want to say you're going to win it, but because like you don't win.
Her ex-boyfriend felt the same way.
Yeah, exactly. So, but like, I remember seeing their chemistry together. And even whenever I was watching the proposal and like her hometowns too, I remember getting so emotional and just because I kind of knew what was going to happen during hometowns, like, but it just made me so emotional, like seeing Ari meet her family and then like with her dad and stuff. Cause she told me about her dad and I'm not a crier at all. Like I'm pretty, you know, like I'm pretty put together, but just whenever she told me that story and then watching Ari meet her family for the first time and Uncle Gary and everything. She always talked about Uncle Gary like all the time.
He was a real, real character during that hometown.
Yeah, but just, and then seeing them like in real life too, it's just like watching that, it just made me super emotional. And then whenever I saw him propose and like, you know, they're like happy, and then like watching the videos of like, you know, like they're like happy engaged couple, like it made me happy. But then at the same time, I knew it was coming.
When did you find out that this switch had occurred?
So I think it like probably like in January, like I reached out to her cause I thought everything was good. And then I like reached out to her and like me and Caroline talk, and she was like, yeah, like this happened. And I was like, what? So I called her and I was like, are you okay? But I didn't want to like pry too much because that's a sensitive thing, and I didn't want to be nosy too at all. So I just like let her tell me whatever she wanted to tell me. But watching it, like I knew it was coming and I knew it was bad, but I didn't know it was going to be that bad, you know, just
an excruciating 60 minutes.
Yeah. Of him not leaving and awkwardly like, are you okay? Like knocking.
That's the crazy thing is they completely spoiled the conclusion. Everyone knew it was in like the tabloids beforehand. And yet I was still shocked. Like,
yeah.
I thought that they had ruined their own finale, and I was so wrong.
Oh, yeah, no, but I feel like we all knew what was going to happen, but we didn't know what was going to be said and how he would say it and how he would deliver breaking up with her. And it was just kind of atrocious.
So it was obviously, you know, from our perspective, it was some of the most compelling hour of television we've ever seen.
I agree.
And yet it also evoked a real feeling of queasiness, a feeling of what are we watching in this room? Should we as the viewer even be there? How do we feel about that now? Like did it cross a line?
I think I kind of agree with Kendall. Like I remember her talking about it on the finale. Like I think that's something we should have seen, even though it's so cringeworthy and it's just so raw. But it's something that we should have seen because otherwise we would have speculated. I'm like, oh, maybe he cheated. Maybe he did this. Maybe he did that. But I feel like even though as painful as it is to like watch Becca go through it, I'm actually kind of glad to see what happened and see how strong she is, like, you know, emotionally, like as a woman, you know, just to kind of go through that and just, you know, take the higher road, basically.
Yeah, if it had been me, would have seen a much different scene.
Oh yeah, no, like if it would have been me or Bibiana, we'd be like, what? He would have got cursed out like immediately.
I would have been a lot more tears and not like cute ones.
Yeah,
just really brutal.
I mean, knowing Ari personally, were you surprised? Like he had already broken up with you and like many other women in the house at that point. Were you surprised by how badly that breakup went?
It's so weird thinking about that because like, I remember the producers were like, Brittany, he's your boyfriend. I was like, no, he's not. Like, I was
that's like, really, why guys? Everyone keeps saying that.
Yeah, I was like, really? I was like, no, he's not. I was like, unless I got a one-on-one date. I was like, no, he's not. And but I guess I didn't really feel like a breakup to me because we honestly weren't there. Like we were more friends whenever I got eliminated in Lake Tahoe. And he knew that. I knew that. Like everybody knew that. Basically, that's why I got friend zoned really hard when I got the most hardcore award. But
for everyone who doesn't remember, Brittany was awarded a certificate.
Yes.
By Ari.
A participation.
Calling her most hardcore. And it was not like the sexiest, most romantic moment.
No.
I'll say that.
When you get a concussion, you really want your man to give you a nice certificate he printed off.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But yeah, like it didn't feel like a breakup, but I was surprised just to see how lacking of empathy he had. Like he was basically like a robot, like emotionless. It sounded like he was reading off of a card or whatever. Like it just didn't seem like he just didn't have a connection, I feel like. And he just didn't have any empathy for Becca. And just watching him talk to Lauren B, whenever it just seemed like he was trying to hold back a smile. He's like, I just broke up with Becca. Like, I'm ready. Like, I'm here. I'm here for you. Like, it just seemed like really weird. So I don't know. Like, that's the part I didn't like. It just seemed like he was too eager to throw away Becca.
Yeah. I mean, it seemed like it was something he had decided to do a long time before he actually did it, though
yeah.
He says it happened more recently.
I think he was lying.
Same. same.
Yeah, we have since heard that he seemed to know he had made a mistake pretty much immediately after he proposed. So,
yeah. I mean, do you think that Ari and Lauren have been getting too much blowback?
I mean, I feel like it was expected because people watching the show, like, you know, there are some, you know, really exuberant fans, you know, that
like
go
us.
To
just very exuberant.
Like not even that, but like people who take it too far, basically. But at the end of the day, like whenever I first saw it, I was really shocked and upset. But now thinking about it, like from his perspective and his point of view, yeah, like he's under an immense amount of pressure to propose and to make this decision pretty quickly within 9 weeks. Cause that's when we film, like it's a whole like 9 week process. So, I mean, I guess it was expected with the backlash, but, I feel like I've seen both sides of it from, I guess, in social media of like, oh, you guys, like you shouldn't like, you know, take, or like be too hard on him. And then at the same time, everyone's like, what have you done? Like kind of thing like that. So I've seen like both sides and I kind of agree with both sides too, but, just the way he did it, it wasn't very tactful and, you know, I just felt like he was just lacking empathy.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's on all of us as consumers of reality television, you know, to balance, being able to react to what we are seeing and enjoying it. And at the same time, create, you know, have some empathy for the fact that these are human beings on our TVs. And we all understand at this point that a lot goes into the production of any of these shows. There are a lot of suggestions being, you know, thrown any contestant's way. And, you know, it's something I struggle with still as a viewer who professionally analyzes this
show. And I feel like that too, like, I feel like people think we're characters and they really forget that we're real people. Cause you know, like with Game of Thrones or whatever, like people like hate Cersei, but like they know she's an actress, but like, and I feel like people do that like on Twitter and just like everything else. It's just like people will literally look you up and then send you a nasty DM. And it was just like, what are you doing with your day? Like to really like, you're going to look me up on social media and then send me a nasty message, like get a life, you know? But I just feel like some people do forget that and they'll just tweet things like out in the internets or whatever. And just forget that we're actually like real people with real feelings.
It's interesting because I often hear people talk about contestants as if they're characters on a fictional show. And I also often hear people say that they think the show is scripted.
It is not.
I've never heard anyone involved with the show in any way say that it's scripted in any way. So that's been my assumption. But is it frustrating at all to hear people talk about something you went through as if it was all fake?
Yeah, no. And even still, like people that I know here in Austin, like they'll text me and be like, and they saw the finale, be like, oh, like, was that real? Or I'm like, yes, it was real. Like my best friend, like literally just went through this. Like, what are you talking about? Like, yeah, it's real. Like no one, it's not like The Hills, you know, like, I feel like everyone thinks it was like The Hills where they're, you know, they have like the earpieces or they're getting text messages from the producers. Like say this, say that, like the producers don't tell us to say anything or do anything. They may give us suggestions, but at the end of the day, it's real emotion. It's really like what we're going through and what you see on screen is basically that person unless they're acting out. So
it also doesn't make a lot of sense because if you think that everything is scripted, then why are you so mad at the people on the show?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you monster for this.
Well,
thing
we're
you did.
Allowed to have real emotions, Claire. It's just that the people on our screens are not.
That's fair, right? So, I mean, getting back to some of the other parts of Ari's season that have maybe gotten overshadowed by the finale. Brittany, you had the first kiss on the season.
Oh my gosh, I did.
Is that something you're proud of?
Actually, I was really proud of that.
It's your most important accomplishment.
It really was. And it was like, you know, in the previews and stuff, and I was really excited. But that was my whole idea. I was thinking about it for weeks before I even got to the mansion. I knew I wanted to incorporate Power Wheels in some type of fashion. And, you know, I got the idea that night to like race him for a kiss. So like, I felt like it was just perfect and smooth. It wasn't forced or anything like that. It just, I just got in there and I did it.
And then you had that great reaction.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you're very gift.
I think, did you introduce the concept of Ari having pillow lips?
Oh my God. I gave him the worst nickname of all time.
And now it will follow him forever.
Yeah. I mean, but before, actually,
it was before like needle dick.
That's
so.
True. I think he has a worse nickname now. He came on trying to shed the nickname the Kissing Bandit.
And instead he got pillow lips and needle dick.
Yeah. Not careful what you wish for, Ari.
Oops, sorry. But yeah, like they were really soft. So, I mean,
I think he exfoliates them.
Yeah.
Does he use those lip masks? Because I've been wanting to know whether they work. Like, I should, you know, just send him a DM.
I think he just needs Lion Dyke DNA. You know, you need to, like, have it running in your veins. So what happened after that first kiss? Like, why do you feel like your relationship didn't develop?
I feel like a lot of things. I'm not his type, I don't think, honestly, truly. But I felt like after the demolition derby date, I honestly like tried to get to know him. And it was outside of the cameras, like when we were spray painting our cars and stuff, I, you know, kind of pulled him aside and I was like, so what else do you like to do, you know, besides racing? And he's just like, I like real estate. And I'm just like, and no, what else do you like to do? What are your hobbies? And he's just like,
real estate.
Like, real estate. Yeah. He's like, I like hiking. I was just like, okay. And then after that, I was like, all right, I'm done. But yeah, then we just couldn't kind of get past like the friend zone thing. And, but we did have like a really good conversation. I think night or rose ceremony too. They didn't show it, but like, we were talking about this. I was just like, basically like, don't friend zone me. But he was like, you know, he basically compared it to Sean and Catherine season. And he told me that, Sean didn't have Catherine on his radar for the first couple of weeks. And he just felt like they were friends, you know, and he basically had her in the friend zone. And then towards the end, she just kind of came out of nowhere and then they just kind of made that bond. So he did like really have like a good rebuttal to like, you know, like, oh, don't friend zone me just yet. And he's just like, you know, like, he's like, I really like you. I think you're really funny. You're like, you make me laugh. And you know, like we are friends, but he's just like, hopefully we can, you know, progress. And it just honestly just didn't progress. Like I saw him eat a worm and then that was it.
It's hard for a relationship to progress after that.
Yeah, it was pretty disgusting.
So obviously there was a lot of talk leading up to the season that The Bachelor might be Peter from Rachel's season, and he was quite beloved by the audience. Did you think that The Bachelor was going to be Peter when you agreed to do the show?
I guess the way they put it, they just like, they didn't really allude to it being Peter. I mean, I thought that could have been it. I wasn't really like a huge Peter fan, but I figured it sounded like they were going to pick someone else from the back end of it. So, but I was just waiting to see like who it would be. And then I had the option to, you know, either go or not go. but yeah, I mean, Peter doesn't do it for me. I'm sorry.
What about the gap tooth?
It's not his fault. He's so gap tooth. Like, not a fan. Not a fan.
That's fair. A gap tooth isn't for everyone. I mean, did it seem like a lot of the girls on the show were hoping it would be Peter?
Yes. I would say majority of the girls thought like were there for Peter. And then they're just like, okay, well, I can probably just go on Instagram and chill stuff. And then it's not Peter. So whatever. So
yeah, always a fallback.
But I think a lot of girls were there for Peter because I think, yeah, even Crystal, when she had her meltdown, she's like, not Peter. And then Jacqueline said, not Peter. And that kind of made me feel bad for Ari, though. Like, it really did. Because, like, or before, pre, you know, fucking over Becca, like, I did feel kind of bad for him. And I was just like, oh, like, that kind of sucks. You know, like, you know, 30 women, you know, who are supposed to be excited to date you, and they're like, ugh, you're not Peter. You know, like that kind of
sucks. I'm sure none of them said it to him like directly.
No, I thought Jacqueline did.
Okay, the first night.
She did. I mean, it was a joke. But
wasn't it Brad Womack's second season when one of his later front runners introduced herself by slapping him in the face?
What?
And said that was for every woman in America.
Oh, wow.
Because on his first season, he didn't pick anyone. And apparently that made all the women in America very upset.
I had no idea. I need to retroactively go back and be extremely angry.
Yeah, I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, it was intense. And that was my first Bachelor season. So I was like, wow, they get real crazy on this show. But that's probably the harshest intro I've seen to date still.
Yeah, to just
a full-on physical assault.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did she make it past night one?
She was one of like the final three.
Oh, wow.
I guess he was into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another Austin resident, by the way, Brad Womack.
Yeah, I think he owns like...
Yeah, apparently he owns
Dogwood.
Here.
Yeah, I think he owns Dogwood. On yeah.
Yes.
West.
Yeah. A nice plug for Brad Womack. Yeah.
So are you excited for Becca's season of The Bachelorette? Do you think like she's really ready?
Oh my God. I'm so excited. You guys have no idea because I feel like they didn't show enough of her personality and she's hilarious. And I feel like she'll be a really good lead because, you know, she knows what to say and she knows how to like kind of work off of like awkwardness and, you know, and she's really good at like making a person feel comfortable too. And she's just so open and just so warm hearted and easy to talk to. I feel like she's going to be like one of the best bachelorettes for sure.
I like that endorsement. I'm excited to get to know her. I was wondering if her personality was perhaps just deadened by the fact that her counterpart didn't really give much.
I think that was definitely what it was because she's pretty amazing and she's really funny. And she told me this, but they didn't show it at hometowns because it's probably awkward, but she made Ari go through this like spanking machine. So, and it's basically like her whole family like lined up and made them crawl through like their legs. And then they would like tap you.
What?
It's called the spanking machine. It is like the greatest thing ever.
Is that like a Minnesota thing? Or?
I guess maybe. I don't know.
I'm honestly shocked the show did not take the opportunity to air something.
It was great.
Like that.
That sounds maybe a little too sexy even for The Bachelor.
But no, I think she'll be wonderful. I think you guys will really like her and enjoy watching her.
Okay, well we'll have to tune in. And I'd love for us to talk a little bit now, kind of zoom out and talk about, you know, the franchise as a whole. This is a show that has been on since 2002, which is kind of insane. Like, it's one of the few reality TV franchises that really has staying power. And I'm curious to hear from both of you, why do you think that is? What is it about a show like The Bachelor that consistently draws in such a big audience and has such a, you know, enthusiastic fan base? Big question.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I can start if you want to take a moment because people ask me this all the time. I mean, there are definitely a few core traits that make The Bachelor really compelling year after year. And I think one of them is that it has this very simple structure, but the results are always unpredictable. So you know what to expect. Like if you pick up a romance novel, you know what the structure is going to be. But you're excited to learn about Lord William. And I read period romances, so like, I don't know. I'm sure there are other ones. But is the woman going to be a feisty spitfire or a demure seamstress? I don't know. I'm going to have to find out.
So many options.
And I think that is kind of the joy of The Bachelor. And it's also the joy of like watching sports. You know, you have something that you follow season after season. The structure is the same. The outcomes are unpredictable. And it's a natural, you know, also part of way of, sorry, it's a natural way of talking about everything else that, you know, is relatable in our own lives, dating, friendships, the way we navigate social situations. I often find myself like identifying awkwardnesses and contestants that I have too. Just it's a great like petri dish for social interaction.
Yeah. I also think that there's, you know, something satisfying about the stakes of The Bachelor that feel very high, but at the same time, you can sort of escape from everything that's going on in the world and sort of project onto this show where the reality is like the stakes aren't that high on a universal level. Right. I also think that there's something, you know, we snark about The Bachelor, and yet if you watch it year after year, at a certain point in the season each year, you probably are buying into the story in some capacity. And I think there is something about it, it taps into this sort of very base desire that everyone has to find love, to find connection. And there's something satisfying about imagining, what if love and dating could be so simple? What if it was, you go through this very clear process, and you know at the end you're going to have an emotionally satisfying conclusion. And I think that just taps into something very base, even as we are incredibly self-aware and looking at the way it's made and sitting there and critiquing it.
Right. Yeah, and I agree. Like, I agree definitely with the analogy of, like, it's kind of like sports, but like sports for maybe like women, because now they have, like, you know, the bachelor brackets and everything like that, and it's just become something. And it, and that's kind of strange to me, because people in America have my picture like on a bracket somewhere, which is which people have
told
me that.
There are worse places.
Yeah, but yeah, like I do definitely agree with that. Like, I just think it's maybe people are interested in seeing maybe the psychology behind going on a show like this, and, you know, going through the process and seeing who comes out at the end. And then you also get invested too with the contestants. And that's how I explain to, like, people who haven't watched the show and then who would just started watching because they know me. And now, like, on this season, like, my coworkers, they never watched the show, but before I got on, and now they're so invested into Becca. And so then they'll watch her season and then get invested in all the guys. And then they'll get invested on the guys who go to Paradise or whoever else. And then it's just like a cycle, basically. And so that's kind of how they, like, hook you, I feel like.
ABC has really figured out how to have a durable franchise. Yeah, it's refillable.
And someone asked us recently whether the franchise would still be on the air if the Bachelorette had never become part of it. And the more I thought about it, I thought maybe not, because prior to the Bachelorette, they were having to sort of struggle to find who is a man who is desirable, who's willing to come on this show. How can we keep mixing it up and keep people interested? Maybe he'll be a prince. Maybe he'll be a former NFL player. Now they just have to pick the most popular person from
software salesman
season.
Who has a nice face and is from Indiana.
You could never have. I mean, Indiana's a huge selling point, obviously. But aside from that, I don't think that Ben Higgins would have ever been The Bachelor if there wasn't The Bachelorette. And that's what's made it very difficult for people to stop watching. Yeah. We're just stuck.
Yeah, because I feel like they can relate now that it's not more so like maybe like C-list celebrities or anything like that. But, like, I feel like they can relate more to these people that they pluck out of, you know, like the Midwest or like anyone like that, or like, you know, like Texas, and then make them the lead because they're relatable and they're like real people.
Yeah. And I think it changes the dynamic in a certain way between the lead and the contestants, because before it sort of felt like I'm a famous attainable man, and I guess I can try to shop for a partner from this pool
normal
of bodies.
Normal group of ladies who happen to be very attractive.
And instead, you might have a guy like Ben Higgins, who's like, we're basically on the same level outside of the fact that I am the lead, and I'd like to find a woman that I could marry one day. And there isn't that weird sense of someone who is stooping down to give some attention and dates to some ordinary girls, which I think is a welcome change. And I think Ari's season almost felt a little bit like a reversion, because he is like a
such
race
a character.
Car driver.
Yeah, he comes from a prominent family.
And he was much older than a lot of the women. And it did sometimes have that weird
power dynamic
of,
felt a little bit. Yeah. It felt uneven.
I mean, did you ever get the sense that he was like, I'm just shopping for a wife?
Yeah.
Some people here definitely feel that way.
Yeah, definitely feel like he had a mold of what he wanted, and he definitely eliminated them. I feel like he definitely wanted someone in their 30s for sure. I was the last 30-year-old to get eliminated.
Oh, yes, we took note. As a woman in her 30s, every week I'd be like, oh, they're all 27 or under now. He's 36. Cool. Yep. I'm going to just turn off my Tinder right now.
Yeah, because I think the same night that you left, or also Jenna left, who was 28. And I was like, yeah, they were the oldest women left. And now it's all 27 and under, which was heartening halfway through the season.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking now sort of about these feminist concerns that we might have with the dynamics of the show. And yet we all hear often, you know, a lot of smart women watch The Bachelor, talk about The Bachelor, women who identify as feminists. What is wrong with us? Why are we doing this?
I mean, it's just for entertainment, you know, like, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, I feel like people bash it, but then also they're watching every single Monday, you know? So I just, it's just
like us. We love to criticize and then also dedicate all of our free time to the show. So,
And as a naturally critical person, it's much better channeled towards people who hopefully will never hear what I have to say. Although that's becoming less and less likely the longer I do a podcast about it. But, you know, as opposed to like my friends or my husband, I can criticize these people on television.
I also think there is, you know, something we get so many tweets like, how could you watch The Bachelor and also care about politics? And I'm like, well, half of my job is actually to cover the intersection of gender and politics. So oddly, women can hold more than one interest. And I do think that there's something about the fact that The Bachelor is quote unquote fluff that is coded as feminine that makes people perhaps be much harsher on it than they would something sort of fluffy that is coded as masculine.
Yeah, like no one ever says to a guy, oh, I always see you tweeting about the NFL, but it turns out you also write about politics. That's
so
crazy.
Confused. How could you possibly have more than one interest?
Yeah. And I mean, and sometimes we do have conversations about the NFL and the ethical issues of watching that. But it seems like a perennial question for women who watch The Bachelor and identify as feminists. And I think we have to accept that not everything we consume in our lives is going to conform to our feminist ideals. And it's about being thoughtful about the messages you're taking in, being thoughtful about what we're being shown, and trying to not just like absorb the values.
Right. It's about media literacy, which is important for everything that we are consuming. You know,
yeah.
That holds for The Bachelor as well.
Exactly. And I mean, do we feel like it is on par with watching the NFL in terms of just being a terrible thing to do?
I mean, I wouldn't call it terrible.
Am I being too hard on the NFL also?
I don't know.
Yeah, I have been wondering since the finale, though, whether there is ever a limit where I'm going to have to stop watching. Like, do we think that there is a boundary they could cross when we would have to stop or never be able to look ourselves in the eye again?
It's hard to imagine exactly what that line would be. I mean, I'm sure there are things they could do that would just make me feel like I can't actually be part of the ecosystem that props up the show. Apparently it hasn't reached that point yet because we are still doing this podcast. But I think, you know, Claire, you and I have talked about this a lot and we sort of came to the conclusion that there isn't a clear limit. It's whatever the market will bear. It's whatever, you know, production thinks will make them money.
Yeah, I agree. Because do you guys like ever think about it? Like there are other dating shows like this, like with a similar format that haven't done well, you know, and I feel like maybe because they either go too far or it's like kind of like trashy a little bit. But I feel like with The Bachelor, like they do have this like aesthetic and this look that and this kind of like formula that keeps viewers coming back, because there are dating shows that haven't done well, like, you know, like all those terrible VH1 ones, like Rock for Love or whatever, you know,
I love them, but it's fine. But I mean, it's true. The Bachelor is great at performing respectability.
Yeah.
And it was funny watching Winter Games to see how many international Bachelor contestants thought it was unbelievably trashy to kiss a man on television and to go to the fantasy suite. And I'm sitting here like, I've watched dating shows in America where you can see people having sex under blankets.
Yeah.
And so The Bachelor has always seemed extremely
chaste.
Yeah. But it does have that veneer of like, if they're going to be in bikinis, it's because they're at the beach and or in a hot tub. And they're only going to have sex in a fantasy suite.
Yeah, and they don't show it at all.
And they don't show it.
Yeah.
And then there's a proposal at the end. Like, who can criticize something that leads to marriage?
Yeah, and I feel like, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And I feel like that's why it's stayed so long, is just because it kind of has that pureness to it towards the end, because it's supposed to be something working towards marriage. And I think that's why it stayed on the air for so long, because, you know, some people, I mean, there's one couple that's been married, but still like the idea of it.
Yeah.
It toes that line. It walks that line of respectability, of chasteness. And I also think it reflects the fact that we do have such an embedded value on marriage in this country. You know, it's like, oh, everything else leading up to it is fine. We have these romantic narratives, and it's like, well, what? It's all just a means to the most important end. One could
and what if
explore.
We had a much faster means to that end, like 9 weeks
like nine
of taping,
weeks.
And then it happens. Yeah, I mean, it's. I struggle with it because I often feel like it is just a veneer of hyper like Judeo-Christian American ideals that cover some pretty uncomfortable dynamics. But that is a big part of its success and its appeal. It perfectly encapsulates the mainstream like white American idea of what marriage and courtship should look like.
Yeah, and it's also perpetuating that fairy tale too, like of what every little girl wants. Like, I want to get married.
Or a
like,
little boy named yeah. Ari. was just hoping for his fairy tale ending.
Yeah, but he's also a 36-year-old commitment though.
Yeah, I was really surprised to hear the words, I just wanted my fairy tale ending come out of Ari's mouth on the finale. Yeah. But like, I respect that he's open about that. And the fairy tale ending, of course, is when you propose again for the second time in 3 months.
Yeah.
It's just what every little child dreams of yeah. for their romantic ending.
Exactly. Yeah. In front of a lot of people who hate you so much.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back with more Here to Make Friends live from South by Southwest. And it might even include a couple real scintillating audience questions. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home and constant daycare bugs. And I'm just like dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate like what's the correct amount of social energy, what kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize, what space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge. Either way, therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/lovetoseeit today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lovetoseeit. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since, you know, people aren't mind readers, we don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all like weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Are you one of those people who thinks they don't have time to prioritize wellness? Yeah, guilty.
Well, Claire, Allo Moves is here to change that whole mindset for you.
The app makes it so easy to keep your wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. There's yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, there's mindfulness and self-care tips, even healthy recipes, and so much more.
It's kind of wild how far-reaching Allo Moves goes. And their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour. It really just depends on what you have time for that day.
Trying to get in a good sweat? Then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, HIIT classes, or reformer Pilates workouts with or without weights.
Or you can find stress relief with things like meditations, affirmations, or face yoga.
It's so hard to prioritize wellness when you have a busy job or kids or both. And now that I have both, it's so important to me to be able to squeeze in a workout when I have that random 5 minutes to an hour in between tapings after bedtime. It makes such a big difference how flexible it is and how easy it is to get what you need from the app.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves.
Go to allomoves.com now and use code LTSI20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
allomoves.com, code LTSI20. 1 in 5 Americans have learn a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit, and I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
Spelled BABBEL.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
I remember watching Unreal's first season, and there's a plot line, spoiler alert, where they mess with a character's medication and she ends up committing suicide with one of the contestants on the show within a show. And I remember thinking, come on. And then the show doesn't get canceled. I couldn't believe that. It seemed so hyper dramatic. And then the Paradise scandal happened. And
it was barely a blip. You know, we're a few months out from it now, and it was a national news story. People were really asking tough questions of production. And yet, somehow, the franchise ends up putting responsibility onto the contestants, kind of encouraging the contestants to stand up for the show. And suddenly, we have, you know, The Bachelor, we have Winter Games, and we hardly remember that that scandal even happened.
Yeah, because I feel like at the end of the day, it's just, it's the contestants' actions, you know, like you do have a choice, but they did make a change. I will say, coming in from my season, getting into the house, they definitely were watching our alcohol intake after that, for sure. Like, so I remember the first day they had legal come in and be like, do you tell us if you feel unsafe? Like, you know, just make sure you tell someone if you don't feel comfortable. And after that, like, you know, they did tally our drinks. You know, we had that drink limit of like, we could only have like 2 drinks per hour, and they didn't even keep hard liquor.
Only. It can't be.
Well, we couldn't even take shots. I was just like, you know, bored in the house. I was like, what are we going to do?
But could you get like a whiskey neat as one of your drinks?
No, it had to be mixed.
Okay.
Oh. Yeah. So, and
splash
like
water. Did,
yeah, basically. But like, I feel like, I don't know this, but I feel like maybe in past seasons, they maybe had it out on the counter and you could just get whatever you want. But this, whenever I was in the house, you had to ask for it. And I didn't even figure out we had like, you know, tequila or vodka until like the third week. So
you're just wandering around drinking Prosecco. Like,
yeah,
I guess
like we just had beer and wine. So that was it. It was just like in the refrigerator. And then
why am I so full all the time?
Yeah.
All of this.
And it's just like, how did everyone get so drunk? I don't understand. Cause no one on the first night was hammered at all. No one got blackout. Like everyone was normal.
That's true. There usually is at least one person who jumps in the pool and you're like, that's the drunk one.
Yeah.
But no, you guys were very like chill.
Yeah.
It seemed like you were all just chatting with each other and
maybe just a little tired from the like 4 or 5 a.m. rose ceremony.
Oh, God bless. Yeah. Rose ceremonies are the bane of my existence. Like I cannot with rose ceremonies. I don't miss those at all.
Did you ever consider just sleeping through one?
Actually, I did. Whenever I got a concussion, they let me sleep. Because it's doctor's orders.
I feel like the whole, like, recommended treatment for concussions has changed because it used to be don't let them sleep.
Yeah, they actually told me that.
Sleep.
Yeah, they actually told me that, like, that's a myth.
This is a medical show now.
Yeah.
We're going to really dive into that.
But I actually missed, like, a lot of rose ceremonies because I was sleeping the whole entire time.
That was such a big plot line when Corinne did it, and then apparently just everyone.
Yeah, now everyone just does it.
Yeah, everyone naps. Guys.
You guys don't understand, like, or I don't think the audience realizes the dates are long. Like, whenever we get there for rose ceremonies, like the cocktail parties will start. So on the first night, we don't get to the house until maybe, I think whenever we start, whenever the sun goes down. So maybe it's around like 9 o'clock-ish. And then it goes until 7 a.m. Like, I think that's when we finally got done. The sun's up, you know, we're in our heels for that amount of time. I was delirious.
Would be a deal breaker for me.
Yeah, we were all delirious at the end of it. And, you know, and it's not rapid fire like you see on TV. It takes a while to like get through it.
So then they can get all of those very uncomfortable facial expressions.
Yeah. And then they just use it to like their advantage. Cause like, I remember like I was looking mean in one rose ceremony, and then like they kind of edited it to where it looked like I was like mean mugging Becca M, and I was like, and she was like, were you mad at me? I was like, no, I was just trying to not to pass out. Like,
that's one of those things that I know is the case, and yet I love the story of it so much that I will be like, oh, look at her glaring when so-and-so got the rose. And then I'm like, that's just fiction. I know it's fiction, but I just enjoy it too much.
It's all like out of order. But yeah, like it's a lot. Even with dates too. Like whenever you get one-on-one dates, they wake you up at like maybe like 4 or 5 in the morning, and then you go, and then they don't come back till like another, like 4 o'clock in the morning again.
Oh my God.
Yeah. You guys don't realize.
I would not be able to handle myself.
It's a lot.
I thought that was illegal. I thought people weren't allowed to work for 24 hours.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what happens after you get off the show. Obviously there's been a lot of conversation recently with the rise of Instagram and influencer culture about, you know, do people just go on the show for the gram to go shill for fit tea afterwards? Is that something that you thought about, or is that something that you feel like is a misconception amongst audiences?
I feel like it's definitely like a misconception, and I feel like people do have that big assumption about us that we're just kind of going on just to get more Instagram followers, especially now that social media has exploded, because I feel like before in past seasons, you know, it wasn't like a factor, but now it is. And, you know, I feel like some people, I don't know exactly who, but I feel like some people did have that in mind. Me personally, I didn't, because I actually have a real job and a career. So that's not my like thing. That's not what I was trying to do. I mean, it's nice to have, like, you know, like to get paid to post.
A little extra money.
But that's not something I would quit my job to do, you know, like, and it's,
so
I feel
we
like,
won't see you just chilling for sugar bear hair.
Yeah.
For,
even
for
though
your
I have gotten
career.
Some and it's amazing, but,
free ad.
Yeah.
That was a sponsored comment.
Yeah. But no, like, I feel like just for me personally, that's not what I was trying to do, because at the end of the day, like, I knew I wasn't going to get a ton of followers, and, you know, I was just going just for the experience of the show. And I was just open to honestly like finding love, even though as cliche as it sounds, but I was just open to the idea, and then just the idea of the show and the experience. But I do feel like people have that motive of going on the show just to get their followers up, and then just to be able to do that.
And you know that, you know, everyone knows going in, there's a pretty low chance that you're probably going to be the one at the end who has
exactly.
that love story. So, I mean, it's complicated. I can't fault people for going in with an understanding of the very various things that could come out of it. And we were talking a little bit in the green room, and I'm curious, you know, if you could kind of share it with everyone. You mentioned before you went in being like, I might not get that many followers. And you were saying before that you had noticed before you went in, and we have noticed this as well, that often contestants of color do not receive kind of the windfall of followers that white women and men who go on the show do.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that beforehand. Even before I went on the show, like, I looked at Rachel's followers, I looked at Jasmine followers just from like last season, and then a couple of girls from Ben Higgins seasons, that had a pretty low follower count. So whenever either people that I knew or my friends, they're like, oh my God, your Instagram's about to blow up. And I was like, you guys, it's really not, like, you know, like, it wasn't a factor to me, because I knew in the back of my mind, it's like, it's not going to blow up. I'll be shocked if I get like 10K, you know. But so I had that going, I had that sense going into it. And it was just kind of curious. It just made me, I guess, not curious, but like, I just paid attention to it, like, now being on the show, because a lot of girls who either got cut night one or night two that literally had no screen time, they have a lot of followers, at least like over 10K. And then, you know, people, you know, recognize me from the show, and, you know, I'm still like under, you know, 10K, which, and it makes me sound like bitter and just like kind of, you know, petty, but I'm really not, like, I don't really like care that much. I mean, it's cool to have, but like, it's something I do notice, and it's something me and CN talked about. And I think CN mentioned Marique talked about it too, like, all, like, not with me, but like with her. So it's something we definitely all notice for sure. Like that, you know, that our white counterparts do have more followers. And I feel like that might be because of the audience of the show, and maybe how relatable the other contestants are. You know, I'm not sure of the demographic of the show, but I'm assuming it's, you know, majority, you know, white women. So, and I feel like with your Instagram, I'm not that great at Instagram, but I feel like it's with your aesthetics. And then, and I feel like if you're posting things about like goals, like, oh, I want to look like that, I want to dress like that. And I feel like with my Instagram, I'm just posting either me at work or like, you know, like just stuff around Austin. It's not like, you know, like professional photos or anything like that. So, and I'm not a model, and that's not what I'm trying to be. But I feel like that does take into account of maybe like the Instagram followers, just basically who people can relate to the most. And then if the viewers are, you know, like white women between 18 and 34, then they're going to follow them the most.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like The Bachelor decided pretty early on that they were going to be a show about handsome white men dating very blonde white women. And yeah. It's sort of made certain efforts to change that, I think, post-lawsuit, which forced them to kind of reckon with how bothered a lot of people were by the whiteness of the show. And I'm wondering if there's potential for The Bachelor to really change, or if there's something inherent in the way it's evolved and is set up that it's never really going to be as welcoming of a place for Black viewers and Black contestants.
I feel like it's slowly, slowly changing, especially with Rachel's season and then with CN too. Like I saw like on social media, a lot of people really liked her. They loved how articulate she was and just how smart and intelligent she was too and beautiful. So I feel like it is slowly changing. And I definitely thought she was like a contender to be like the next Bachelorette if Becca didn't want to do it. I definitely thought it was going to be between either CN or Tia because a lot of people really liked CN and the fact that she, I think talking to Ari, kind of called that out. Like, you know, like we don't have like a lot of representation on the show. And, you know, she's like, I've never seen that like growing up, you know, like someone who looks like me. So I think that is important to have, you know, representation. And it's, you know, like 2018. So I feel like we are
overdue. I mean, yeah. it's insane that we're even having the conversation.
Yeah. And I feel like that's what CN was maybe speaking to. And I feel like they are kind of, you know, maybe more pivoting to that, you know, and just having more diversity, because I feel like Marique was like the first Indian, American, I don't know her nationality, but I feel like she was one of the first girls on there too. And, you know, maybe they'll work towards having like an Asian bachelorette or something like that. So I feel like they're getting there. It's slowly happening.
I mean, we were a little worried about Ari's season in part because his penchant for blondes is not a secret.
Very he's got a pattern.
Yeah. Because even his most recent girlfriend before the show looked identical to Emily and
Lauren.
And to Lauren. Yeah. But it was a pretty diverse group of women and a really vibrant, you know, interesting set of women who brought different things to the table.
Yeah. I was actually pleasantly surprised at that because going into the house, we don't meet anyone until night one and we don't see each other until we get into the house. And once I got to know everybody, I realized how intelligent everyone is. Everyone has something going on outside of the show, or majority of us did. And so I was very pleasantly surprised to see that we were not all like just unemployed, like, you know, pretty little bimbos. So like, I was really surprised to see that. And I was surprised to see how well we got along too, because we're all smart. And you know, like I felt like in the house, we all supported each other a lot too. And I was really happy to see that as well. Like whenever someone got a date card or a date, you know, we were just like, yeah, like, you know, like awesome. Like, let me help you with your makeup. You want to borrow a dress? Like it was like that. So, it was like, it just made me happy to see that, because going in, I was just like, everyone's going to be a complete bitch.
And I think there, you know, earlier in the show, there was a trope of the catty woman and pitting women against each other. And that is something I do think we've seen evolve even in the years I've been watching it. And, you know, I always love the relationships between the women more than maybe the actual love story. Yeah.
I think the show is great at adapting slightly its
very
formula
baby steps
to the current cultural conversation. And female friendship is such a popular topic of conversation right now. So I have to wonder if they always had that material and they left it on the cutting room floor. Yeah. And now they're like, let's maybe show them having a nice conversation.
So before we, you know, throw to audience Q&A, we just have to ask you, Brittany, are you like done with this franchise? Is this something you would like recommend as an experience to other people? Or yeah, how do you feel now?
You know, there are talks of paradise. I might be on an island this summer. I don't know. Ooh. We'll see. Got to have some conversations at work about it. But you know, who knows? But I feel like if you're interested, I feel like one of the reasons why I did the show, I was actually really interested in the psychology behind it and just to see how reality TV works on the back end of things. So, and I got to see that and it was very interesting. But I will say, don't go on it if you have anxiety attacks, or if you're if you're prone to anxiety, this is not the environment for you. Or if you have I would say go if you have like thick skin, or if you're like, if you know yourself very well, because I was thinking about this earlier today. If I would have went on the show when I was younger, I probably would have been a completely different person and I would have been portrayed differently. And I'm glad that I went as an older, you know, woman, because I know myself and I know what I wanted. So I would say, you know, if you're interested in the show, like just kind of know that going in. And then I was also very surprised to see like how much people actually like cared too. So be cognizant of that. Like, you know, people will find you and, you know, and message you crazy things. So, just kind of be cognizant of that. And just basically, I kind of just have to stay off social media now. Like
blessing and a curse.
Yeah. It's a blessing and a curse. It was a cool experience. I'm glad I got to do it. I'm glad I got to meet all the people that I got to meet. You know, like meeting the producers, they're amazing people. I feel like maybe with Unreal, like they painted them as like these monsters, but they're really not. Like they become like your best friends. Like one of the, producers, her name's Natalie. She went to, she got married and she's like really close with Christina and she came to the wedding and stuff. So like we become really close with these people. They're not like monsters. They're not out to like get you or just manipulate you and do all these things to you. But you know, like they're there to just kind of like get you to open up. And that was one of the things too that I'm glad I did, because it's hard to like open up emotionally in that kind of setting. And then whenever you do, like, it's just like, wow, like, you know, like you're talking about your feelings so much, or they're asking you like, how do you feel? What do you think about this? Like, what do you think about that? And like, no one really like really asks you that much in real life. So that was kind of like maybe therapeutic in a way.
So basically, yeah, it's like group and individual therapy, except it's chopped up into little sound bites, and also everyone gets to judge you in America for it.
Like, what if your therapist took your deepest, darkest moments, and then they were like, don't worry, I'm just going to put it on TV, but like,
it's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah. Basically.
So before we go, we'd love to see if anyone has any questions.
Was Lauren B's dates really as, like, was she really that boring of a person? Or... I feel like, or was she more?
So Lauren B is really nice, you guys. She's so sweet, but she's just very quiet. So I remember in the house too, like on the first week, she came up to me and just started asking me about myself. And I thought that was like really nice, because looking at her, she's like striking and she's gorgeous. And you might, you know, make this assumption like, oh, like, you know, like she's just a snob or something like that, but she's so nice. She's like a black belt too. Like, you know, she's really cool. So, she's just very quiet and just very reserved. And I feel like in that setting too, you just kind of have to, it's hard to kind of get used to, but I think as things progressed, like she kind of came out of her shell, but, away from the cameras, I feel like she was great. But then I think maybe in her interviews, she just came off as very closed and, you know, just, she was just very
minimal.
Minimal and filtered. Yeah.
She has a minimalist aesthetic when it comes to speaking.
Yeah. Wow.
On I love Lauren. Sorry. On the Lauren topic, were you shocked at how willing she was to go back to Ari within like 2 seconds of him breaking up with Becca?
I feel like yes, but I know it wasn't like within 2 seconds. So I don't know if you guys remember Tia saying this, but like Tia and Lauren S were in Dallas New Year's Eve whenever Ari reached out to her. So there was some time, and I know, and I'm sure they were, you know, talking, and he was just like, you know, warming her up. So, cause I watching it, I was just like, fuck, like really, you know? And so like watching it, I was like, yeah, like it looks like that. Like, you know, she just took him back like immediately, but I think she definitely had some reservations, cause I actually ran into Lauren S here last night, like in the convention center, she's working, but we were talking about it for a little bit. And she's just like, yeah, like Lauren had some reservations for sure about, you know, talking to him and, you know, opening that door again. So it's not like that cut and dry. Like there's obviously some conversations between, you know, him breaking up with Becca and then him like actually reaching out to Lauren, because I heard too that he was reaching out to her like when the show aired too. So
question for the stage. As prominent voices for and participants in this phenomenon, how would you describe the Bachelor fan base at large, and how do you engage with that fan base?
I think Brittany's word exuberant was really good. It's a very passionate, and I think, in, you know, what's interested me in recent years is seeing the rise of both the social media community around The Bachelor and also the rise of the discussion, why do smart women watch The Bachelor? And that makes me wonder if for a long time we assumed a certain thing about who watched The Bachelor, that it was all women who were very uncritical consumers, women who, like, for lack of a better term, we thought were not that smart, who were traditional and old-fashioned. And in fact, a lot of the women who watch the show, I'm realizing, and men, and I love seeing more men being open about watching the show without saying, my girlfriend makes me.
Male fans that are very...
A lot of male fans have come up to me. Like, and I'm just like, oh, like, I was like, a girlfriend didn't tell you to watch that? He's like, no, I watch it by myself. I was like, oh,
because
okay.
It's riveting television.
I've, in the past, I used to hear so many men say, like, my female roommate got me into it. But I think that it's the more that we know about the viewership, because we see them tweeting about it and talking about it, the more we can see that it's a really engaged, thoughtful group of people who enjoy watching the show, both for the romance and also to have something to think about and to unpack. And I think that's really cool.
Do you think that social media has made reality shows more compelling, or has it kind of corrupted them? And also just like GIFs and other technological, you know, advancements.
I'd say for myself, more compelling. Also, especially in a moment where we so rarely feel compelled to watch television live, there's something about the fact that you want to engage with the community around this show. You want to see how other people are reacting and you want to engage with their commentary. That is, I think, a really, really powerful draw and something that keeps people coming back. And also, that's why, you know, we can have a podcast about it. And since we started our podcast, there have been a ton more podcasts that also address The Bachelor every week. And for some reason, we all are open to listening to 5 podcasts a week that talk about the same 2 hours of TV. It's kind of incredible. I also just love a good GIF.
2 to 7 hours of TV a week.
Yeah, it got a little much this year.
And I also heard, someone made a comment to me recently, this past week, they said, I like going through Twitter first to like see all the reactions and then I'll watch the episode. So I think definitely like with having like hashtags and Twitter, you know, come about and then having the show, I think it definitely draws in people and then it'll help draw in new viewers too.
That's also interesting. I wonder if it must also reframe the way some of us are seeing it, because we are consuming other people's commentary rather than just, you know, absorbing it fully through our own lens.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's either or. I think it has in many ways enhanced the experience. It's made fans more loyal. It's made fans, even ones who are already critical consumers, even more thoughtful because they're being offered new ways to think about the show all the time. But also there is, as we were talking about earlier, the question of like, you go on the show, you're offered a bunch of lucrative Instagram sponsorships. It's very tempting to just become an influencer. I kind of wonder how that's going to affect people's ability to transition back out of being a Bachelor person. Like, at what point does someone like Becca Tilly, is she an Instagram influencer until she's, you know, 80, or does she eventually have to make a shift? And that's something I'm curious to see, is if contestants being so available on Instagram and Twitter and also available to receive a lot of abuse going to have a more negative impact on people who watch the show in the long run.
And I feel like that professionally too, like that's kind of what I'm worried about, like, or the line I'm teetering on professionally, because I've read some articles too where previous Bachelor contestants kind of have, like, they have a hard time or they struggle to go back into like the professional world because some companies may see it as a distraction. I read that somewhere. I forgot what article, but I remember someone, you know, commenting on that, like, who was a contestant. And, you know, so that's what I'm, that's like kind of my biggest fear is, you know, after this is all said and done, but, you know, like, now that we have the internet and it's so prominent, like, everything's, you know, you can find it. So that's kind of the line that I teeter.
I think we have time for one more question.
Exactly.
Hello. My question is about the casting process. And clearly, everyone is gorgeous that gets on the show, beautiful and skinny. So do you think that the producers or the casting people, they curate this group of beautiful women specifically for The Bachelor that they have in mind in the back of their head? Or do you think they're really truly trying to get a diverse set of women that would they would find any day? And what's the process like? I mean, do you think that they'll ever consider, you know, not only the diversity, but someone that's average, you know, an everyday woman that, yes, she's pretty, she's smart, but maybe she's not a size zero?
Yeah, I'm not a size zero. but I feel like with this or with the casting round that I went through, so we didn't know who it was going to be, you know, going through the casting and, you know, they announce it like, so when we find out, that's when you guys find out. So, and then, you know, the casting director will call you and be like, are you still interested? And, you know, I was like, yeah. But I think it may be a mix of both. I have no idea because I'm not the casting director, but I think maybe they look at, you know, we have to go through a lot of like different tests and everything, like psychological tests, you know, STD tests and like everything that like that. But I think it's like maybe like a mix of both, like who they think would be good for the lead that they have in mind. And then also who maybe will be good for TV. I mean, like with, you know, like Lauren B, like, you know, she's so reserved, you know, but I mean, she looks good, you know, obviously, but she, you know, a lot of people say that she's boring and she's not, but you know, like I feel like casting has to, you know, kind of have that into consideration too. So, so I feel like they do like cast like average girls. Like I feel like my season, everyone was pretty normal. Like no one like had a nanny for, you know, like, and they're 24 or anything like that. You know, everyone had a job and stuff. So I feel like it kind of goes a little bit of both ways, but obviously like, I don't know, like on the back end of how casting works. So they didn't tell me any of that. So
I would be curious to see if they would ever cast a woman who was like plus size. But I mean, I guess I would worry that much like when you first would have like one or two black contestants on the show and they were sort of shown as like, look, we have one.
Like tokenism?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Tokenized.
And then they were never really chosen. They were never paid attention to by The Bachelor. I would be really sad to see people added and then have them treated badly on the show. So I think that that would have to be a very careful process of realigning what the whole show looks like and introducing, you know, a more healthy mix overall instead of having like, here's our girl who is a plus size model, you know, sort of thing, which I've seen on dating shows in the past.
Yeah. So thank you guys so much. This has been wonderful. I know we could all probably talk for another hour, but unfortunately they are cutting us off. So thank you so much for joining. And yeah.
And that's it for Here to Make Friends. Thanks to our guest, Brittany Taylor. Thanks to the team at TuneIn for bringing us to South by Southwest. And of course, our fearless producer, Nick Offenberg.
If you haven't yet, remember to find Here to Make Friends on Apple Podcasts or tune in to subscribe and give us a rating. We're also on Facebook and Instagram, and you can find us both on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose, or you can always send us an email at heretomakefriends@huffpost.com.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back in May for Becca's season of The Bachelorette.
Let's do the damn thing, Claire.
Unbelievable.